T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
News Radio 930 WBEN. It's Tom Bowerly and David Bellavia. It's Bowerly and Bellavia on News Radio 930 WBEN.
Yeah, welcome. It is Bowerly and Bellavia, the show brought to you by Publishers Clearinghouse. WBEN listeners, Publishers Clearinghouse is giving away $5,000 a week forever on February 28th. $5,000 a week for life for you, and then $5,000 per week for a loved one. Go to pch.com right now for your chance to win. Entries due February 25th. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited. Well, David, obviously a very important day, very important anniversary here in Western New York with the 10th anniversary, I don't know where the time has gone, of the crash of Flight 3407.
Yeah, you know, 10 years, I remember the day it happened, just how crazy it was. I was in Washington, D.C. I saw the CNN alert, and I thought, Clarence Center? Man, there's a Clarence Center in Buffalo. That's the weirdest thing in the world. And then, you know, obviously it was right here in our backyard. Affected so many people. So many people, you know, I remember there were witnesses to it. Of course, you had, you know, the 49 souls that were on board. The family that was hit on the ground this morning on WBEN. Go to WBEN.com and see the interview, a survivor's story 10 years later. Just incredible. First of all, Karen Walensky, her strength, that she's written a book, but the idea that, you know, there wasn't a whole lot of talk about her husband. There wasn't. He was just that you know, poor guy on the ground.
Yep.
With the family that had their lives turned upside down. So many lives were affected by this, but, you know, the chances of that happening, just the whole thing is just bizarre. And, you know, again, we're 10 years removed. Is there bitterness? Was this avoidable? I mean,
absolutely.
I can't help but, you know, accidents happen. I get it. But, man, oh, man. You know, these normally when an accident happens, we look at the pilots and we tend to talk about, you know, their heroism. You think of Sully and landing a plane, or even in Iowa City when that plane crashed and there were a loss of life. It was the fact that the pilot's skill avoided more loss of life. In this case, you got to look at the pilots and say, what the hell were you doing?
Even now, you watch the animation, the NTSB animation of that crash, and these pilots were absolutely the dregs of the world of pilots. They had no idea what they were doing. They had no idea how to fly that plane. A decent pilot would have been able to pull out of that and land that plane safely, but these people were, I think, guilty of gross incompetence as pilots. And it's tough to say that because, you know, of the dead say nothing but good, but they're lack of proper training or lack of skill, lack of ability to read the situation in the air was absolutely inexcusable. And unfortunately, they took people with them.
A horrible tragedy. But then again, in the midst of tragedy, you saw Western New York come together in a way that, you know, we really haven't been tested like that before. You saw the county, the state, all national media attention all came to Buffalo, New York. And, you know, I remember the game the day after the Sabres game. There was an emotional Lindy Ruff, the Sabres, the fans. Western New York came together for the first responders, for the people that were affected. And, you know, again, it stinks that it takes a horrible tragedy like this to show the best of a community. But, you know, I can't think of a bigger story in Western New York that was on a national spotlight that affected so many people, and Buffalo at the end of it, you know, I think we showed what kind of community we are.
Well, we certainly did. I just wonder what our audience was doing 10 years ago tonight when all hell was breaking loose in Clarence, New York. I mean, I think we all have a story about the night 3407 went down if we live in this area, especially those of us who live near the airport.
And what were you, your story we were talking before the show?
I was on the couch, and I was watching TV, and there was a freezing rain that night, just like, you know, we've got kind of a freezing rain out there right now. I'm not sure what it is right now, but we certainly have had some today. But I'm able to see the planes coming in for the final approach to one of the runways from my couch. And I remember having the thought, well, I sure hope that their de-icing gear is working properly because, and I've never had that thought before, and I've never had that thought since watching the planes come in. But probably about 40 minutes after I thought that, I went upstairs and I turned on the radio and I heard one of our hosts on the radio. And I'm thinking to myself, how come this guy is on the air right now? What is going on? And he starts talking about a plane crash. And I'm thinking to myself, well, where did the plane crash and how many people are we talking about? And then when he said outside of right in Clarence Center, and then it was I thought it was a jet at first, but turns out it was the prop commuter plane. And it was devastating. So naturally, the first thing I did was get my clothes on and drive out to the scene because I wasn't sure if the radio station was going to be there live at that point or what the story was. But being out there that night and driving around, I think the thing that I will remember most is Chris Collins in his official Erie County executive jacket. And then the other thing I will remember most, and I still do to this day, is the horrible smell from that crash, because I put myself in a position of being downwind from the crash. And one of the smells was jet fuel, and the other I really won't get into right now. But it was pretty vile.
How close were you? Because eventually they shut off that entire area.
Yeah, probably about a half mile.
Wow.
Maybe quarter to a half mile.
Yeah. It's weird to see all of the folks that have made their career in the 2016 election. But there was a time 10 years ago when, you know, Pete Alexander and Jim Acosta and all these really household names in media, they were all here covering that story. This was a national story, and, you know, the national media all descended on Buffalo, New York for probably, you know, a good week.
Well, again, you know, everybody's got a story. If you want to get in with yours, it's 803-0930, star 930 on the cell phone, 1-800-616-WBEN. Have you any vivid memories of 3407 past what you've already said?
You know, I don't. I remember flying the next day from D.C. to Buffalo, and, you know, I don't think anyone that flies into Buffalo that flies over that area doesn't think about, you know, we were talking to Tim Wenger before the program, and, you know, he's like, it's always in my head as we approach from that direction, you look over out a window or something, and I always think of 3407 and, you know, the homes down there, and you think of just, you know, again, I focus always because so many of these folks, there was a 9/11 connection. I believe one of the victims of the crash, you know, had lost someone in September 11th. And there was all these stories, but there wasn't a lot of focus about that house and just the absolute horror that has to be. I mean, you know, you think about what happens when you lose control in an aircraft, what the victims are thinking as that plane is going down, and you hope that things happen quickly and that there's no suffering. But when you're in your home and you're in total comfort and peace and a plane crashes into it, that has got to cataclysmically change your life forever.
No,
there's no way that there's ever a normal day again when a plane out of the sky falls into your living room.
But, you know, you talk about the suffering, and I think the worst story I had to endure was people saying that there were people still alive in the fuselage after it had plummeted into the ground, which I find very hard to believe. But the other explanation for the screaming was that it was people on the ground that were screaming and not people that were in the fuselage of the plane. And nobody has ever officially said one way or the other whether anybody survived the initial impact. I suppose they'd have no way of knowing.
Well, yeah, you hope. I mean, that's just horrible to think about. But at the same time, first responders, whether or not the training is there for plane crash. I mean, there was a little bit the fact that it was in close proximity to the airport where the airport crew could get out there and do their best to fight, you know, the conditions and whatnot. But really, the first responders, there was nothing in the emergency management or the Erie County handbook. You could train all you want for a plane disaster, but those guys really came through And I mean, there was so much care taken, you know, with just, these are human remains. This all has to eventually go into the custody of a family, and the care that they took, the respect that they showed, the way that they kept a lot of people that, let's be honest, a car accident happens, people show up and just want to gawk. But law enforcement got there, first responders got there, they kept those folks out. They still gave out information in the media, but they showed the utmost respect for human beings that were no longer with us. And
well,
you know, it was a tough job, I'm sure.
Every year, the Clarence Fire Department has its Labor Day Carnival. And that's when I think the most about 3407, because I'm quite sure that some of the guys and ladies who are part of the Clarence Fire Department were there that night 10 years ago. And the carnival itself is held just a stone's throw from where the house was burned to the ground, the Walensky House, and where Doug Walensky died.
Yeah, you know, someone had just pointed this out on our text board, but the weather conditions almost, you had mentioned that it's identical to the way
yes.
it was 10 years ago today. So you could understand, you know, if flights are delayed or canceled, you know, was there more that could have been done? We talked about pilot air, the de-icing, all the other things, but there are still planes going off today in Buffalo without a hitch. You know, whether the protocol has changed, again, if the flight would have left Buffalo, would it have been different if it going from another airport into Buffalo? You know, who knows, but
it boils down to pilot error.
Yeah, no, really. I don't see the difference between taking off in Buffalo 10 years ago and today. All the protocols are being followed, and there seems like there was no added step up for more de-icing. It's Buffalo, New York, and we've been flying out of these conditions for years.
803-0930 is the phone number. If you've got a memory you want to share from 10 years ago, the crash of Flight 3407, let's go to Chris in Kenmore. Chris, you're on WBEN.
Hi, gentlemen. I do recall that evening pretty clearly. I was actually flying home that night from Atlanta, I believe it was. And we had been delayed throughout the day because I don't know if you guys remember that day. That day, there were severe winds throughout that morning. And that day, I remember there were schools that were canceled and all that. So we were delayed. And I remember we were scheduled to land about 10:15-ish. And as we were descending into Buffalo, as most people know that, you know, come from a certain direction, you can see the city skyline and you come over the lake. And, you know, you can start to pick out some landmarks like the Galleria Mall. And then, you know, which we were able to do. And then as I kind of, you know, realized we were close to landing, you know, I looked out again, and all of a sudden we were a lot higher back up in the sky than we were. And I thought that was kind of strange. And I said to the person next to me, I think, you know, I said, it's weird. I think we're going back up in the air. And so we had, you know, at first I thought maybe it was a landing gear issue. It made me a little bit nervous. But eventually we kind of spun around and landed probably about 10, 15 minutes later. And I remember coming off the plane, and there was a woman in an NFTA, you know, she had a business suit with an NFTA name tag on, and she kind of was ripping down the hall of the airport, you know, looking like she had seen a ghost. Of course, I didn't think much about it at the time. And then we walked out, and I, if I recall correctly, I feel like the airport allowed, you know, guests, family members to be there pretty close to where it is now, but it was a little bit different setup, you know, and so we kind of walked through all those people. And you know, my father picked me up. It was late, you know, very, very garbage weather that night. And we were coming down to 33 to head back to the North Towns. And I remember seeing a state trooper, you know, light flashing, you know, and flying by me, but again, didn't think much of it. Well, I woke up the next morning, pretty early and, you know, turned on the news and same thing. I think it was Don Postles and Jackie Walker were on at 7:30 in the morning, which to me, I thought was bizarre. And then of course, you know, the story came out, obviously what had happened. And I heard the air traffic control came on with a, you know, they played that recording. And sure enough, it was our flight that they were talking to. It was our pilot asking him, could he see anything?
Wow.
And, you know,
because they lost track of. Yeah, I had a Friday morning flight, and I want to say it was a Thursday night. Was that, was it a Thursday when the crash happened?
Yep. Caller just hung up.
I think if memory serves me, and I could be mistaken, but I want to say that it was Thursday and I had a Friday flight. And I remember it was when the news broke on the national, you know, media. I was in D.C. I want to say it was around 11 o'clock or midnight when the news came out on the national wire. So I'm sure Buffalo people, you know, it was locally covered much, you know, quicker than it made it to the national wires. But I just remember it being like a Thursday, if memory serves. And but again, you know, there were people that were calling into the program, you know, calling into radio at WBN at the time 10 years ago that actually saw the plane, that actually saw the impact and how surreal that is. You know, I mean, 2009, we don't really have anything close to that. 9/11, there was maybe some people in New York, but these things just don't happen here, you know, luckily. Well, and when you see a plane that low, you think you're, or you know, and the way it came down was just, you know, I'm sure if you saw it, you thought to yourself, there's no way that's what I just saw.
I just wonder if anybody listening to us actually saw the actual plane coming out of the air and what must have gone through your mind watching that. I mean, what an absolutely horrifying situation. It was, by the way, Thursday night. Your memory is absolutely infallible, like a steel trap. Let's get back to the calls on WBEN. It's Mark in Buffalo. Mark, you are on 3407, 10 years ago tonight. What were you doing?
Well, the morning after, I was called to, I have a tent rental company, so they needed me to set up a tent that they were going to use as a morgue tent, and I arrived out at the scene early that morning, and it was really surreal because you could see where the plane had fallen from the sky. It hit with an impact that actually sent a debris field up, and you could look at the houses around it, and there was actually mud lines and debris on the surrounding houses. The first responders, I can't imagine, especially what a lot of the volunteers went through, because I watched them for a couple days, and it's a methodic process. Plastic bags in your hand, white gloves on, freezing cold condition, going through every section, gridwork by gridwork, in a 1 foot by 1 foot section. And yes, the smell, I'll never go through what the families went through, but even as an outsider who was at the site for a couple days, I had nightmares, you know. I do a lot of flying. I had to fly that same plane 2 weeks later, and you know, getting on that plane was a scary situation.
You know, I wanted, and I'm going back to 10 years ago. I want to say, because flying in after the crash, we weren't allowed to take that approach. They changed the way that the flights traditionally came in because that area was cut off from. But as far as you were describing the debris on the different houses and everything, I mean, I don't care how much training you have as a first responder, nothing sets you up for that. And the other thing is the amount of respect and the investigation that goes on and how many people in the media. I remember reports of people trying to sneak in through fields to get better angles, and the law enforcement guys had to put up basically a human, you know, shield around the entire crash area because so many people wanted a different camera angle, and they just, out of respect, wanted to keep as many people out as possible.
And if you remember, a lot of the first responders and a lot of the people in the white suits were students. As I remember, a lot of them were students, okay, from different universities because they needed people to go out there and... You know, you're basically, you know, you had dozens of people just 1 foot by 1 foot going through freezing cold conditions, separating out what unfortunately might have been a body part.
Right.
You know, I remember seeing piles. I mean, it made me almost cry when you saw piles of gifts that people might have been bringing back.
Oh, and then you think about the people at the airport who were waiting for that flight to come in, and how horrible that had to have been to receive that news. And I wonder if the lady wearing the NFTA blazer running down the hallway was part of the notification team or part of rounding up people who were there to pick up family members who tragically would never arrive.
Yeah, it was.
You ever think about that?
Never forget. And you know, I'll give credit to everybody who had to put themselves in a situation of that aftermath to try to help out in a situation that's really unimaginable.
Well, thank you very much for the call, sir.
All righty.
All right. It has been 10 years since 3407. If you've got a story you want to tell us about your role in 3407, even as a witness or somebody who lived in the neighborhood, we would certainly like to hear it as we remember the victims of that horrible plane crash. We're looking back on 10 years since Flight 3407 went down in Clarence. 50 people died. And David, Barbara Burns actually was friends with the Walensky family prior to the Walensky family having Flight 3407 crash into their house, and was able to talk with Karen Walensky 10 years ago.
Yeah, this is from 10 years ago, and Barbara Burns, who, by the way, was in studio today with Karen Walensky 10 years later, but this was an interview done 10 years ago shortly after the crash.
Tell me what happened last night.
Okay, it was around a little after 10 o'clock, between 10 and 10:30. I was in our family room, which is at the back of the house, and I heard a noise. Planes do go over our house, but this one just sounded really different, louder, and I thought to myself, you know, if that's a plane, it's going to hit something. And next thing I knew, the ceiling was on me, and I just, you know, I thought I didn't know how much was on top of me, so I was panicking a little, but trying to stay cool, and, you know, happened to notice a little light on the right of me. So I did, I shouted first in case anybody was out there, and then just kind of pushed what was on me, part of that off, and crawled out the hole. I had heard, like, you know, a woman crying, and when I came out of the hole, you know, the back of the house was gone. You know, the fire had started. I could see the wing of the plane, and Jill was over to the side, you know, crying, of course, hysterical. She had been in the front of the house, in the upstairs front bedroom, and she heard the noise also, and then there was the hit, and from what she's saying, it appeared, you know, that the attic kind of came down onto where she was, the roof and that, and she couldn't get through the windows because of the fire that was there, but she too miraculously saw an opening and got slid out of that. And when I got her, I mean, of course, she wanted to know where Doug was, and I didn't know. And I just told her that we had to get out of there. We had to get away from the fire. Because when I knew it definitely was a plane, I knew there might be explosions or something. So, I mean, I just grabbed her. We ran to the back of the yard and then out towards Clarence Center and then back up our street and looked for the neighbors. So that's it.
What part, you were in the family room, is that in the back of the house?
That's in the back of the house, and Jill was in the very front of the house, and to me, it looks like the plane just came down in the middle of the house, and unfortunately, that's where Doug was.
So, were you sleeping? Were you napping?
No, I was just watching TV. Jill was watching TV.
And do you know what Doug was doing, or?
Well, I know he was going to get ready to go to bed. But, you know, he'll always before, you know, he'll go out of the family room if he's in there, and he'll say when he's going up, well, I'm going up. And I don't remember him saying that, but he was working on some of his sports stuff in the dining room. And my thought is that he was in there because I don't think it was long from the time he left that family room that this happened. It was only a few minutes. And my thought is that he was probably in there, and that is from the appearance of what's happened in the middle of the house.
I mean, what's going through your mind? I mean, can you believe? It seem surreal?
I mean, when the ceiling first fell down, I thought to, you know, like, I think the first thing I said to myself was, you know, is this real? You know, is this reality, or am I dreaming something? And I knew it was real. And like I said, I didn't think I was going to get out of there. I mean, I thought this is it. And I mean, a kind of panic set in, but I mean, for that little light there, I mean, that gave me the initiative. And I don't know if you gain strength when you have to, but whatever was on top of me, I just pushed off, and at least part of it, enough that I could get out of that hole. And Jill, too, she's still, you know, not sure how she got out. I mean, she knows she did it, but just pushing, I guess, pushing her way out, too. And
so you both went to the hospital. Are you okay physically?
I've got, I think, a fractured collarbone, so I've got my arm in a sling. So I'm a little sore, but that's it. And Jill had some scratches on her feet, and that was it. And, of course, we had no shoes on. We're just going in our socks, you know, running out in the fields and stuff. And we had wonderful support from our neighbors and friends. And the fire people were there right away, too. I mean, they came very fast. And the people at the hospital were very good, too, very caring and very nice.
Have you heard anything from emergency crews about Doug? Or
no, and I don't really know who I would ask or what I would do. I don't know yet.
If you could just tell people one thing you'd want them to know about him, what would you tell them?
Oh, gosh. He was a good person. Loved his family.
That is Karen Walensky with Barbara Burns.
I mean, it was just hours after, I mean, the strength, just you could just sense her shock of, I mean, the roof collapses. She doesn't even know, you know, what's going on there. That's how soon after the crash that interview took place.
Let's get back to the calls as we take your memories of what happened 10 years ago tonight. This is Tony on a cell phone. Tony, you're on WBEN.
Hi there, guys. Thank you. You had asked just a few minutes ago if there was anybody that actually saw the plane. And I was the guy that was driving home from the gym. I lived in Clarence Center, rented a small carriage house, probably 100 yards from the crash site. So I'm driving home. I'm approaching the volunteer fire department, and lights lit up Clarence Center Road. I craned my neck to look out the windshield of the Grand Am I was driving and watched the plane go over my car, and approximately 150 yards, maybe 200 yards away, smash into the ground.
Did it, I mean, how did it go over your car? Like what direction, you know, from, you know, left to right, right to left?
Right. So I'm driving Clarence Center towards Clarence Center Road towards Clarence Center. And it went from my right to my left, completely the opposite direction of the airport. As I told everybody, I can remember it like it was yesterday. As I told every news crew that talked to me, it was on a very, very bad trajectory, obviously. So there was nothing right about anything with the flight. The sound, the lights on the road, the direction, everything was bad.
Was it straight and level? Was it in an angle?
No, definitely at an angle, and from what I could remember, and again, talking with all the reporters, I thought I was seeing the underbelly of the plane, but left wing down with the nose down. Yeah, it was not good. There was a house between me and impact, but the minute it went over me, I obviously ripped the car over to the side of the road. It's not very fast there. I was only doing 40 miles an hour maybe, so...
Tony, was there instant fire explosion?
No, and I'm amazed. One, I'm amazed that the two ladies were able to get out of the house, because it wasn't long. It was not instant fire, but it was within minutes, and the fire was enormous. As I mentioned, I lived only 100 yards from there, so I called 911. I had never had to do that before. I get the operator on the phone, and she calmly says, "What's your emergency?" And I said, "I just saw a plane crash," and she calmly again asked, "Well, what's your location?" And I said, "You don't understand. I just saw a plane crash." And she said, "I heard you. I need to know where you are so I can get you help."
Wow. Now, I don't know if you heard the interview of Karen, you know, who's obviously in the home and lost her husband, but she referenced that she heard crying, and then also talked about her daughter that was in the house as well. But it appeared that there was someone in the plane that she could audibly hear. Did you have any witness to, you know, anyone? Did you see Karen and her daughter leave the home?
Yeah, no, nothing exactly like that. So after I had called 911, I pulled my car up just to the firehouse. So I'd only moved my car maybe another 200 yards where I could see down the street, but was still in my car. From that point, obviously, the fire was enormous and raging. I pulled around the block, literally, into my carriage house, right behind a main house on Goodrich Road. I'm only 100 yards. I crossed through the backyard of the neighboring house, and I'm now on the street. the fire is so hot at that point that you can't even get onto the side of the street where the crash had happened. That's how intense the fire was at that point. Again, I don't know how the ladies got out. It was an absolute act of God in order for them to be able to get out of that house, because it was just minutes, and I was through that backyard and couldn't get to the other side of the street.
I mean, just for them to leave the debris, I mean, you would think, you know, don't move, let the, you know, first responders get to you. Panic sets in, people, you know, freeze in those situations. Even for you to have the presence of mind to do something, a lot of people, when calamity strikes, they freeze. They don't know what to do. I mean, that you were able to call 911 and do anything, I think is pretty miraculous.
There's not a plane that flies over my head, if it's of any altitude, where I don't still to this day react. When you guys were chatting just a few minutes ago about anybody that witnessed it and saw it, I'm driving on my way for work to meetings on the eastern side of the state, almost shaky, like get ill.
Can imagine.
It's what
you had to see, knowing now that 50 people died in that crash. So in what other ways has that changed your life? Has it had an impact on you? I mean, did you have to go through counseling or anything?
No. I'm not saying that I shouldn't have. Karen in her interview talked about the guilt of being happy. I've never heard it put that way. But it resonates with me. I watched something that not a lot of people watch, and it's a terrible feeling.
Can only imagine. Well, thank you very much for calling. And just a quick question. Obviously, you know, a situation like that, seconds seem like minutes. Minutes seem like 5 minutes. 5 minutes seems like an hour. How long was it before the first emergency responders arrived?
Very fast. We have that volunteer fire department. Like I said, that
of course
was within seconds of me when I made the call, and yeah, they were on scene within probably 10 minutes at the most. I would say 10 minutes. There were people that had responded from that department itself.
Well, Tony, thank you very much for the call, and thanks for telling us your story. We really appreciate it.
Yeah, you bet.
What were you doing 10 years ago tonight, the anniversary, the 10th anniversary of the crash of Flight 3407? Remember that night very, very vividly. Remember the day after very, very vividly. And it was truly remarkable in the most tragic of ways. Let's get back to the calls as we reminisce about Flight 3407, remembering the victims and what you guys experienced. Here is Terry in Snyder. Terry, you're on WBEN.
Hi, Tom. Hi, Dave. Having a quiet day. I was just driving my kids home from school, and you know, I know it's what happened, and staying kind of low key today. I lost my nephew, and I'm not part of the family's group. I just my nephew was traveling. He was a musician. His name was Coleman Mellett. I remember talking to you right after it on the air one time. He was coming from East Brunswick, New Jersey, to perform the next day with the Buffalo Philharmonic with the Chuck Mangione group. Brings back a lot of memories. I actually got to go to Washington. It was like a privilege to go and experience that whole thing after that, obviously a really bad thing. Great kid. He would be 44 right now. Just wanted to say one or two things if you'd let me.
Sure, go ahead.
I just wanted to say honestly to the entire community, and I mean everyone, politicians, and I don't say that often, the media, the NTSB nationally, but locally, our community was incredible, Tom. It changed my life in the big picture of things when I look back 10 years later. And when I say it changed, it was from the minute it happened and I had to go down to that Cheektowaga Meeting Center to this day. The way everyone's handled it, just in general, has been with class, dignity, and kindness. You couldn't ask any more from a community. And I mean that from the bottom of my heart. And I really don't have a lot else to say.
All right, Terry, thank you very much. Words well said, well spoken. Here is Joe on WBEN. Joe, you're on. Hello.
How you doing, guys? Yeah, I actually lived in the subdivision that's right across from Long Street. I live in the cul-de-sac. And, you know, those planes go over my house, you know, almost every day on a daily basis. And for some reason that night, I mean, I was I was upstairs in my bedroom, and I was in my bathroom. My bathroom window actually looks right at Long Street. And when that plane came over, it just sounded like really nasty. And I look over at my wife, and I'm like, geez, can these planes get any lower? I go, because it seemed like the thing was, like, right on top of my roof. And I happen to look out the window, and then I see this big explosion. And my first thought, I thought it was like a meteor or something that hit, because it was just a big explosion. So I jumped in my truck, and my son came with me. I went right around the corner, and I came down the street, and I was kitty-corner from the house that was across the street from the house. And I see the tail wing sitting out of on the you know sitting out sticking out of the ground, and I'm like, what the heck is that? And then I was like, oh my God, a plane! I mean, never realized that a plane went down. And all the volunteer firemen were running up the road, and within seconds that flame was just blaring. And then the two girls that lived in the house, you know, they came running out, and I'm like, who the heck are these? And it was just unbelievable that somebody even got out of it. And the very first pictures you actually saw on the news on Channel 7 was from my cell phone that I was sending over to them, because I was talking to Keith Radford on the phone that night. But it and like the previous caller said, to be honest with you, those planes go over my house. I'm right in that flight path. I live right in that back cul-de-sac, from Pine Breeze it's called. And you always wonder, when's the next one going to happen?
So it never goes away?
No, because like I said, they go over your house every night. And it's directly in that flight path, direct right over it.
But you didn't feel the ground shake or anything like that?
No, definitely felt, like I said, I thought it was something out of the sky, like a meteor. I mean, I didn't see the plane. I saw the explosion. I saw the fire. And that's when I got out, and like I thought it was something that fell out of the sky. I never thought it was the plane. Which did the noise that plane made was a sound that I've never heard before, and hopefully never hear again. But you can tell that the engines were definitely blaring. He must have been throttling his engines, because you can hear the engines just throttling away.
Wow, Joe, thank you very much.
No problem. Thank you.
Wow. All right. Your stories of what happened 10 years ago tonight, 9:50 p.m. is the official 10th anniversary of the flight of 3407.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.